Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG, and we're online at kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com. Coming up on this Thursday edition, another look at some of the things going on in the sports world, the protests against the protesting, back and forth, a couple of interesting updates about that that are worth looking at. Also, some good tips on how to become happier and healthier, and also we're going to answer the question, are we living in the last days? That and more this edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG, and we have some online sources, kpcg.fm, thetrumpet.com as well, and the TuneIn app, you can listen on that as well. I think there's quite a few other places. Of course, all the programming is available online in the archival form, in case you want to download and listen to it later. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon here with you today, and a lot going on in the world, as always. We're going to take a look at a few headlines to start, highlight a few programs that are coming up, and then get into a very interesting question and an answer to it. Are we living in the last days? What does that mean? And we'll take a look at that. Tonight, this is Thursday, so tonight the NFL, a couple years ago they changed their schedule around to where they play Thursday night games because people couldn't get enough football for a while there. I think that may have changed, but so they want to play Thursday night and then, of course, Sunday and then Monday. And so tonight is a Thursday game, Green Bay Packers, Chicago Bears. That's always an interesting game for people. But, of course, there's these national anthem protests that are going on. And it gets interesting when you have some of these very old franchises that have been around for a long, long time. And now they're starting to want to protest the anthem. And their fan base does not want to get involved in this. I think most fan bases don't want to get involved. And so that's the drama now. What do the fan bases do?
That's true. And the fact that a lot of the people who can actually buy the tickets are from the middle class, just in most cases, is going to mean they're a little more conservative and they're not going to appreciate the anthem protests. So even in some of these more liberal areas like Oakland and San Francisco, probably still even there, most of the fans wouldn't like it.
We've got a story about that in just a minute about how they're not showing both sides of that argument yet. But this headline here is from the Green Bay Gazette. Packers national anthem plans continue to rile fans. A request by Green Bay Packers players for fans to join them in a show of unity. And I'm not sure exactly what they're unifying in anymore. But anyway, a sign of unity during the national anthem before their game Thursday apparently did little to calm the debate. Packers fans on Wednesday continued to blast the NFL, the team, and players for what they perceive as showing disrespect for the nation, the flag, the military, or the national anthem by sitting, kneeling, remaining in the locker room, or locking arms during the national anthem. Supporters say players are peacefully exercising their free speech rights on the best stage available. So there's two sides to that debate. According to Aaron Popke, the Packers' director of public affairs, he said, "We've had a steady stream of feedback beginning Monday morning, and it continued into Wednesday. We've heard on both sides of the matter from the fans. We take note of their concerns." So we'll see what the Packers fans do up there. I think they're in Lambeau tonight, so we'll see what goes on.
Wow. Everything just shut off for a second there. We still on the air?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
little blackout, little brownout.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
That's never happened before. I couldn't resist saying something about it.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I guess tonight we'll have to see what happens. I was a little surprised Aaron Rodgers was one of the guys who was requesting that too. It looks like he's just completely gone along with this. And the thing is, they're calling it a display of unity. How is this possible? It really is like up is down and down is up right now. Everything just seems to be upside down, because wasn't it unifying to just see everyone stand with their hand over their hearts? I don't remember people being an uproar about that. what's causing a lot of controversy and disunity and division is the fact that some people are kneeling, some people are staying in the locker room, some people even have their hands on the shoulders of those who are kneeling, even if they're not kneeling themselves. That's what's causing the division. The way it was wasn't doing that at all.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Yeah, it's a bizarre. Instead of just doing the normal thing, now there's 85 different ways to you know, handle yourself during the anthem, apparently.
Their show of unity tonight should be everyone standing with their hand over their hearts, and yeah. They'll be totally unique at this point.
Yeah, it's very interesting. One of the fan here for the Packers, he says, "I am so ashamed of and appalled by the ignorance of any NFL player who would dare disgrace our stars and stripes or the memory of hundreds of thousands of fallen U.S. heroes who paid with their lives so that we may live free." That's according to Stephen Teffen Haler, a native of Brookfield who now lives in San Antonio. He's a Packers shareholder and 20-year U.S. Air Force veteran. Of course, it's not hard to be a Packers shareholder. They sell shares all the time. So, but apparently the shareholders don't get a lot of say in what the team does. So we'll see. They're one of the oldest, of course, and most traditional, I guess, franchises there in the NFL. And, I just think that's not an area where I think people are very interested in all this stuff. And I think most areas aren't that way. There's a story here from the Sporting News. Why didn't TV networks show angry booing NFL fans on Sunday or Monday? And there were quite a few, and they didn't show them. And one insider said they were told not to show the fans.
They could not blot out all of the booing, though. It still came through over their microphones, despite the fact that you never saw a picture of any of the fans in the stands. They can only do so much to hide it, and apparently they were trying to hide it. It seems like anyone who has actually spoken about it on any of these networks, any of these analysts, have been totally for the protests. They are totally disconnected from the vast majority of the fans. The vast majority of the country, it's well over 60% that disapproves of these anthem protests.
The Sporting News says a segment of Patriots fans in Foxborough, Massachusetts, for example, nearly booed their own players off the field when some Pats sat or kneeled, with some screaming, "Stand up." One behind-the-scenes TV staffer at another stadium told Sporting News that camera operators were ordered to avoid crowd shots in case they showed fans counter-protesting the protests. See, media's got their hand in it, deeply, deeply in it. They're pushing it. They didn't used to show the national anthem before games, only during the Super Bowl usually, or maybe a bigger game. Most cases, they didn't even bother. But no, now, oh, hang on, we'll be back with the anthem right after this.
Oh.
Because they want to show these protesters, but they don't show the fans who are booing their own teams off the field. And so I think the NFL has lost sight of the fact that they only exist because people enjoy watching them play football. If people don't enjoy that anymore, no NFL.
There is a reason that people are booing, too. There's no way around the fact that these protests are anti-American in every way, because if they really cared about whatever these issues are that they're even protesting, who knows at this point, they wouldn't have to do it during the anthem, during the display of the flag. They say that they love the flag and are just as patriotic as anybody. Then do your protest some other time. I don't know. Kneel during the game, like in between plays or something, or like in the end zone right before the game starts, outside of the anthem time. You could do it in such a variety of other ways that don't involve the flag or the anthem. And even beyond that, of course, you could do it outside of your workplace and outside of the stadium.
You know what they should do if they really feel like they have to make a statement? Right when they're about to score a touchdown, don't go into the end zone. Just kneel. And then everyone would get the message that you really have a strong feeling about this here. Oh, sure, you wouldn't get the touchdown. Your team would lose, and you'd lose your contract and your job. But, you know, you made a point.
Hey, it's a show of solidarity, right? We have to make these protests. That was a joke last year when the 49ers were going up to play the Bills. A lot of the fans were saying they should play the national anthem every time Colin Kaepernick takes a snap.
Right.
And then he'll just kneel on every single play.
That's true. Three and out. They keep losing yards. Negative, that was kind of the way they played last year anyway. But it's unbelievable that this is a thing. And it does start to turn people off. And like you said, most of the country, 60-some-odd percent at least, is not pleased with this. So we'll see how long they keep pushing it. It's always interesting. You know, football, any of these sports programs, they've really gotten into the politics, of course. You know, like every time there's a national event, a tragedy, you know, you got one of these guys, I think of Bob Costas. He's got to tell us how it is before a football game. I really enjoyed watching him comment on sports. I don't need to get my value system from him, though.
He has made a few comments there. I think he had like a speech about gun control one time before one of the Sunday night games, and that's just not what anyone tunes in to listen to him for. So maybe he just doesn't understand what his actual job is. I think there was also a CNN town hall last night that had Michael Bennett. He's one of the Seattle Seahawks players, and also Doug Baldwin. But Bennett said that people just need to treat each other better. I didn't specify what that means. I mean, it's like he's conjuring images of people savagely beating each other to death in the streets. I treat people well. People treat me well. I don't have any problems out in public, so I'm not really sure what he's talking about there.
That's funny. Treat people better.
Everyone just needs to treat people better. Well, what are you talking about?
They're paid to obliterate the guy across the line. Treat everyone better, but I'm going to take that guy's head off if he comes over the middle. Okay, there you go. Well, it's interesting. We'll see how that continues to progress. Top story today at thetrumpet.com, how to survive as a POW. A really interesting write-up here by Jeremiah Jacques. A seldom-discussed chapter of the Pacific War provides an example of the power of positivity during times of crisis. Everybody experiences times of crisis, some more severe than others, of course, and so this is a really neat example, and you can read that at thetrumpet.com. Pretty neat. Neat picture, too. An original artwork piece there that's pretty cool.
Oh, I love that. We have some talented artists as well, by the way. If you're not already convinced by the words, the art is worth showing up for.
Yeah, so that's a great write-up there at thetrumpet.com. Check that out. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today with your host, Brent Noctegal. He's coming from Jerusalem, giving you that message today. And it gives an update on what is happening in the Middle East, including Israel, Iran, Iraq, etc. Yeah, a lot happening over there and a lot of good information from him. He's really keeping his eye on that region. And, of course, if you pay attention to Bible prophecy, you know that there's a lot of prophecy that talks about that region, and it's really a powder keg that kind of ignites a lot of things in this world. So make sure you listen for that Trumpet Daily Radio Show from over there today. Historical note that's sort of interesting and could be motivational in some way. 1785 on this day, Napoleon Bonaparte graduates from the Military Academy in Paris. He came in 42nd in a class of 51. You wouldn't think he'd end up being this military genius because he didn't do so well, but when it came time to the actual battlefields, he was quite the mastermind.
War goes far beyond classrooms and drills, so clearly he's a pretty good example of that. And there are also, I believe, Ulysses Grant was similar to that. Robert E. Lee, his counterpart in the Civil War, actually was always second in his class. There was one guy who beat him like all 4 years, but General Grant was somewhere like in the 50s or the 80s or even up to close to 100 out of 200 men in his class. But look how successful he was for the Union in the Civil War.
Are you named after him?
My dad jokes about it. I've never been able to quite pin down why. Okay. There's a couple verses in the Bible that like have my name in passing in a totally different context.
Yeah.
So he jokes about several different reasons, but the general is one of them.
Okay.
I'm not sure. To this day, I'm not sure if he's serious about it.
Yeah. Some people have a really, you know, specific story about why their name is something, and others it's just like, I don't know, sounded kind of neat. I liked it. So, I think we probably make our names more than anything else. So, what you're named after is can be really interesting, but I guess if you have a neat story, you'd think about it that way. Like, yes, you should have a neat story, and if you don't, you'd be like, well, no, I'll make my own name. Unfortunately for my kids, I don't know if it's unfortunately, but we just kind of went with what sounded good, we thought.
That's probably, in the end, the most important thing. If it doesn't sound good, then your kid's probably going to hate it and change it later in life anyway. So that's right. A good reason to at least make it an acceptable name.
So it's an always interesting process of coming up with those names, as you just did recently. And of course, a lot of times names come up and you think, well, this is a neat name, but you remember somebody or some situation that has a negative connotation for that name. I went to school with that kid with that name, or you know. So, and then you also have to think about, you know, if they're standing in line at the restaurant or something, and the person has to call their name out for the table. You know, you don't want it to be a thing because you're going to have to deal with that name for a long time.
That's a good point. At the whole restaurant be like, what kind of name is that?
What was that name? Yeah. Got to spell it all the time. Yeah, it's always interesting. Here's a few things that I think might be of some benefit. It's from Time Magazine. And the new ways, they say, to become happier and healthier. It's official. Happiness really can make you healthier. I think, the Bible talks about that quite a bit. New research suggests that positive vibes are linked to a stronger body and mind as well as a more satisfied life. Here are 8 science-backed tips you need to find more joy in your life. I probably won't do all 8 because I think some of them are dumb. But I'll give you some that I think might be beneficial. Number 1, they say, explore life without social media. Can you do it? It's a challenge. They say social media now dictates how people interact with friends, read the news, and navigate their day-to-day lives. But the constant exposure may be taking a toll on the human psyche, according to research. Research studies have linked more frequent Facebook use to poor physical and mental health, plus diminished life satisfaction. So, maybe don't do so much social media. You might be happier and you might be healthier.
Yeah, I feel like that's been a pretty good change in my life, not having social media for at least like the last year. I do admit, though, sometimes I'll go on like an athlete's Twitter page, and especially if he's outspoken about social issues, just to like see what people's responses are, and generally that ends up being a poor use of time, and I get frustrated by it.
Yeah, there's so much on the social media, and people get in a lot of trouble on there too, particularly politicians and athletes and all of that. Then they always have to apologize about what they did and what they said, and I mean, just the fact that if you're very much interested in looking at it all the time, just the physical act of having to look at this device, whether it's your phone or a computer or whatever, as opposed to doing something else, over time you could tell that's probably not going to have the best benefits. You know, it'd be better off to take a stroll than to just sit and look at this device. So it takes up a lot of just concentration too. You know, if your phone's constantly dinging and mm-hmm. things like that, you're constantly looking at it, and doesn't leave a lot of time for other things.
Yeah, and then when the phone's not dinging, you're expecting it to, and so you're still distracted by the possibility of another notification. When I had Twitter, I used to like feel obligated to at least check it a couple times a day to make sure that I was caught up on whatever hugely important things were on there, and it did end up being like a time waster. It's not really that fun to be on, but it's just something that turns into a time waster.
Some people make a career out of it. Another way that you might be happier and healthier is to embrace your emotions, they say. And stay with me here. they say, in a recent study, people who felt the widest range of positive emotions had the lowest levels of inflammatory markers in their blood. Lower inflammation may translate to a reduced risk of quite a few illnesses. And so they talked about diverse positive emotions, excitement, being amused, being, you know, cheerful in different ways. And I think there's a point there, just, you know, there's some really good information. I don't know if it's on the trumpet.com. I think it is, but about emotional maturity. And that can go two ways. If you're emotionally immature, either you can just be kind of out of control, or you can be, you know, just like you blunt all of your emotions to where you don't feel anything. And either one of those is an immaturity. You know, you want to have that nice balance in the middle where you can be excited, genuinely excited about something. You know, it's interesting to look at a young child, how excited they get. Not saying that you want to be like that exactly, but they get really excited about things. And as an adult, sometimes I think, when's the last time I really got excited about something? You know, so anyway, I think it's a good point as long as you understand it correctly.
Right. And there's obviously a huge place in life for the right kind of emotional expression. And especially if it's positive, laughter, we can learn a lot from children about that because they laugh like 3 or 4, 10 times more a day than we do something like that.
Over nothing most times.
Yeah. Over nothing at all. And then even like for us, we end up not laughing as much as we easily could about things that are actually funny, and it would even be a health benefit for us.
It's hard to laugh at ourselves too.
Yeah.
And we do, because, you know, there's, you always, I guess, just human nature. You try to save face or look good, but we do a lot of dumb stuff. And sometimes you just have to shake your head and be like, wow, what am I doing? But it's funny.
Sometimes, like, stuff I say on the air. I'm like, what did I just
what,
say?
What did I just say
that out loud?
Hey, it's live. What are you going to do? Another way that you can be happier and healthier, I think this is a great point. It's biblical. Let go of grudges. Don't hold on to a grudge, whether it's against yourself or other people. It doesn't help your health or your happiness. Got to forgive. Move on.
Yeah, there have been a couple of times where I was, like, determined to keep a grudge for a couple of weeks, and it's just too difficult. It's too painful, and, you know, obviously you never want to see that person, and it does really drag you down. It takes a lot of concentration, actually, to keep a grudge, which is just taxing on the mind as well.
Yep, for sure. NFL players could learn something about that. Just let go of the grudge. It's not the gridiron, it's the grudge iron.
The grudge iron. They're mad about the anthem for some reason. They're mad about a song.
Yeah. If you're mad, take it out on the opposing team.
That's right.
Tackle them harder. Another way that you can be a little happier and healthier, they say, is deploy some acts of kindness. They have found that people that are kind to others end up being happier and healthier. Would you believe it?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely true. Giving a gift sometimes feels really good. I mean, usually you'd think like receiving a gift is better, but sometimes it actually feels nicer to give one.
And a couple of little quick notes, they say the things that might help you be a little happier and healthier as well as in line with that is to write a thank you note. Thanks. Drop almost everything. They say one study found that the more people multitask, the higher their anxiety levels. So try to focus maybe on one thing at a time. Get some sunshine may help regulate mood. And don't do it when you're looking for Pokemon, by the way. See that at the park occasionally. You're outside. Take a look around. Caught up in your phone.
Ugh.
Chasing the imaginary Pokemon. I've seen people doing that. And it's funny because I've sat in an area at the park because my kids were playing. So I was sitting on a bench. And I keep watching people. And I know what they're doing. They're looking for the Pokemon. And I feel like I could just tell them. Like, I think it's right there because I've seen everyone go to that spot. You don't need the phone. I'll tell you where Pokemon is.
You're the ex. You become a master just by observing
just
it.
Just observe it. He's over by the bushes. That's where everyone's going.
I was at a baseball game one time. These kids kept walking right in front of me when I was trying to watch the game. They were, like, following their phone back and forth on the outfield lawn.
Oh, wow.
Just looking for the Pokemon out there.
They should have put it at the pitcher's mound. Don't mind us.
They would not have been derailed. They were going to get that Pokemon.
Yeah. So here's a great one, too. They say to be a little happier and healthier, jot down what you're grateful for. Being thankful. That's a great one. That was talked about on the Trumpet Daily Radio show the other day about some of the NFL stuff. Maybe be a little more thankful for what you have. You know, like the multi-million-dollar contract and stuff.
How many things do you think they could put on a list? I mean, it would just be astounding to list all of the physical, material blessings that they have, and that goes beyond obviously family and friends and the millions of fans who support them. They have a pretty good life, as do we all. We should all be more thankful.
Yeah, so that's a great idea to make a list of some things that you're happy for, thankful for. And also, one last one, they say, think about doing someone a favor. New research shows that that's enough for a lift even before you act. Yeah, well, I guess you got to see it through, though. You can't just be like, I'm going to do something nice. No, I feel pretty good. I think that's it. Good enough.
It sounded like they were content with just thinking about it, not even doing it.
I have somebody that I know. I won't out them, but they, to me anyway, they sort of have a reputation, at least with me, of telling me something they were going to do nice for me, but then they didn't. It's just like, you know, I saw something and I thought you'd really like it, but I didn't get it for you. Like, it's happened multiple times. And I thought, well, maybe you feel better, but now I feel a little worse.
I feel the same way about that as I do about people when they're like, I was going to insult you just now, but I'll keep it to myself. It's like, you still told me about it, right. And so it has the same effect.
Yeah, it doesn't make it better. That's terrible. It makes it worse, because then you kind of want to know. Like, well, just tell me what it is so I can, you know, figure it out. So those ideas might help a little bit. You're listening to Trumpet Radio Live here at 101.3 KPCG. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at KPCGFM. And if you'd like to email us, do that. comments@kpcg.fm. If any of the Packers are listening, they could send me an email. Let me know what they think about the national anthem. I'll read it on the air. It's game day. They're not listening today. There's a really great write-up at thetrumpet.com we're going to talk about a little bit. It's a reprint article. If you're not familiar with the reprint articles, when you go to thetrumpet.com, there's a literature tab at the top, and you can look at books or booklets or magazines. And then they have reprint articles, which is a collection of really good information put in an article format. And we're going to talk about one today in particular that asks the question, are we living in the last days? That conjures up visions of the older, scary gentleman with the billboard walking around ringing a bell for some reason. And I think that's what people think about when they think about the last days.
Yeah, I actually saw that in Seattle last year. We were walking out of the ballpark, and there was a guy standing on the sidewalk across the street, and he had a megaphone, and he was telling people to repent of their sins. And he actually looked like a completely normal person, but he just happened to be doing something that most people don't find socially acceptable. You know, that's not usually the best way to approach it, because you're literally taking a megaphone and yelling at people. That's not usually too convincing.
Yeah, I wonder about when I see things like that, if they have any sort of track record of success. Like, has anyone ever come up and been like, you know, when I was leaving the game and you screamed at me through the megaphone, it really made me think about my life. And like, has anyone ever been persuaded by that?
Yeah, it seems like it's a pretty high rejection rate. Just like people who go door to door with the gospel, basically, they'll try to hand out a Bible or some magazine from their church. And I always hear people who just like reject it immediately. I mean, if it's free, I might take it, but who knows?
The people don't love it when they see those individuals coming. It is a great question, though. Are we living in the last days? There's a lot about that in the Bible. World leaders and scientists are frankly frightened by the prospects of the future, if they're being honest. They warn that man now possesses the means of committing cosmicide, which is a suicide of the whole human race, and even talk in terms of overkill. You know, you see those statistics sometimes. You know, we could kill all of mankind X amount of times over because of the weaponry. And they realize something totally unforeseen must soon occur to stop the present trend of world events, or humanity will finally destroy itself. You can think about some recent events. You don't have to dig back too far. The Iran nuclear deal, quote unquote. North Korea continuing to threaten nuclear attacks. They're conducting tests, seems like, just about every week these days. They're shooting missiles over Japan. Can you imagine living in Japan, having a missile fly over? Boy, oh boy. And, of course, there's also the threat of terrorists getting a hold of some sort of a nuclear device after the breakdown of the Soviet Union. There's a lot of that material floating around out there. I mean, these are our headlines today, and they are serious, serious headlines.
And you have to wonder about some of these world leaders when they make these deals like the Iran deal. On the one hand, they're saying that we know that human survival is at stake. But on the other hand, we have leaders who are making deals that literally only possibly postpone the problem for a decade or so. If Iran complies perfectly, that it might postpone it for a decade. Are they really just focused on solving the problem, or do they hope to maybe die before it all explodes?
Yeah, it kind of feels that way with a lot of things, whether it be war or economic collapse. It just seems like people can see at the end, it, you know, everything goes bad. But maybe if you just push it down the road a little bit, we don't have to worry about it right now. You know, sometimes you'll hear people say, like a bill passes, something with taxation or something, and they'll say, well, you know, we're stealing from our grandchildren because we're spending it all now on different programs. And some people probably are concerned about that on some level, but I don't know. I think a lot of people are just trying to get out. You know, hopefully I can live through my life and then whatever happens, happens. It seems like that's probably the bigger concern. I mean, that's the way the policies go.
Yeah.
If people were really, really concerned about the nations, say next generations, I don't think we'd be enacting a lot of the policies that we see.
Right. I got that impression from a guy in the NFL Players Union. They made some sort of deal that was going to hurt players in the future. But he's like, well, I don't care. I'm going to be retired by then, and it's not going to affect me at all. I feel like that's actually the hidden motivation behind a lot of what these world leaders are doing. It's like, well, I'll be out of office, or I'll already be gone by the time this problem finally erupts, supposedly. That's what I think, at least. And so they don't really deep down care that much about putting the problem away forever.
Yeah, and anyone that's in power also has kind of a selfish intent, usually, to where their probably biggest concern is staying in office or leaving a legacy or something, and not really doing the right thing, because the right thing to do in a lot of these cases would be very unpopular. If you look at the economy of the United States, what's the right thing to do? People have to change their ways. It's not a popular message. If you want to deal with some of these nuclear threats, what do you do? Well, in some cases, you might have to use your military to do some serious, operations. Not a popular message. So even if people kind of know maybe what needs to be done, they want to hear the smooth message, kick the can down the road, and then, I don't know, just maybe hope. We're good at that, right? Humanly, just hope things work out at some point, and that's sort of the trend, I guess.
It does seem like a lot of men with some serious, hard solutions often just don't get elected, because, like you said, with the economy, if we were really trying to get out of this national debt, it would probably take a lot of personal sacrifice, cutting back on our standard of living, maybe even higher taxes for a while, a lot of things that people would truly hate. And of course, it just doesn't, people don't even know if the problem will be solved, and yet they're making these sacrifices. So they don't even have a true vision of if they can get to the end of it and finally put the problem away.
Have to gut the social programs.
Yeah.
Which means some parties wouldn't be elected anymore.
See, look at that. Could you imagine if we didn't have this welfare state and this mindset that the government has to support you and hold your hand and do everything for you? There are plenty of able-bodied people who just don't work because the government will pay them for doing nothing.
Yeah, that's the state of things. And about 2,000 years ago, if you are familiar with your Bible a little bit, you know that the greatest newscaster the world has ever seen reported that the world would end up like it is today. And of course, that was Christ. Definitely a different newscaster than what you see on television these days. He was giving the truth of God as to what you would see happen. People think of him as a newscaster or as a prophet, but that's what he was. He came with a message. And he talked about this in Matthew 24, which this reprint article talks a lot about. This is out of the New Living Translation. He said, "For that will be a time of greater horror than anything the world has ever seen or will ever see again. In fact, unless that time of calamity is shortened, the entire human race will be destroyed." So there you go. That's what Christ said. And that's not something you hear mentioned often when people do talk about him, but that's what he did say. And so for those who may scoff at this idea that we are living in the last days that Christ prophesied, you can look at 2 Peter 3:3-4. Peter warned that there would be scoffers in the last days. So along with a message warning about the last days, you have people that'll scoff and say, no way. And that was prophesied as well. So they're fulfilling the prophecy.
That's true. And with Christ as well, he was killed for the message that he brought. You see, I guess, some parallels today with the way people are so vicious toward any shred of truth that they come across, and the way that they forcefully try to silence anyone they disagree with. Well, it's that way times 10 at least if you're bringing the total truth like Christ brought. I mean, look at the way he was brutally murdered. He wasn't just forced off a college campus. He was killed for it. And historically, the true church has gone through persecution like that as well, hiding in caves, trying to escape the great false church. That's just part of what comes with delivering a message like this. It's such a hopeful one, and yet it does convict the soul. It does require people to repent and to change.
Right, and Christ would have been killed earlier if it had been time for it. The mobs came after him pretty often. Yeah. They didn't like the message. He had to usually get away from them. And then, of course, there's the example there of Stephen, where he got killed. And they were so angry with what he was saying, they were like closing their ears and telling him to shut up, and then they killed him. So, I mean, people get pretty hostile, and those were the religious people of the day. Mm-hmm. So it just shows you some of the thinking there. But think about just the fact that people do scoff today. People scoff about a lot of things. Evolutionary thought scoffs at the existence of God. Everybody scoffs at the necessity to keep God's laws. Our world is full of scoffing today. Entire television shows are built on scoffing. Anything after 10:30 Central Time is scoffing. at everything you can think of. So would there be scoffers today? Sure there would be, and they're all over.
Yeah, and it does seem like the scoffers are completely bereft of any facts on their own side, too. Those late-night shows you're talking about, they will not present a single fact, at least not honestly. I mean, they've all become impulsive liars because they're so committed to what they believe that no facts could ever change their mind.
I saw this headline. I think it was from just a night or two ago. And I won't say who it was, but one of the late night guys. There's only a few of them. And this one in particular is kind of goofy. And his whole show is silly games and things like that, talking to celebrities, laughing hysterically at everything. and so he was going to go in depth onto the new tax code that's being proposed. And I thought, well, I am interested in that, but not from you, sir. Well, you have no credibility to discuss the taxes.
Yeah.
But they're just scoffing because that's what they're paid to do. And I don't think a lot of them, maybe a few have a real big opinion on things, but I think a lot of them don't care. I think they're just, I got to say this to get paid. Okay.
Yeah. Another one of them recently had a child who was born with a lot of difficulties, and he's been basically using that child as political fodder to push a radical left healthcare agenda on his late night comedy show.
Right.
I mean, it really, if you mention something like that being talked about seriously on a comedy show a few decades ago, people would scoff at that. They would have thought that would never be possible.
Yeah, and I always think anytime something like that comes up, I think, well, so this is an important matter now because you're affected by it. Well, it was important before you were affected by it. If it's important, it's important. Mm-hmm. Not just whether you think it's important. But anyway, we digress. That's a lot of scoffing going on. And this reprint article points out a really interesting point here. If you're thinking about, okay, are we in the last days? Think about this. Never before has man had the capability to destroy every human being on earth. Christ's words could never have begun to be understood in correct context until the 20th century, when the atomic bomb, followed by the hydrogen bomb and other weapons of mass destruction, were invented. In fact, the meaning of many other end-time prophecies could not be understood until the end time. Christ said that in the end, if he didn't return, no flesh would be saved alive. That wasn't possible until the invention of these bombs that we see today that could wipe out everyone on earth. You're not going to do it with a musket, right? You could always hide. You could always get away from a war-torn region. You could go to the mountains or something. I don't know. Go across the ocean. But you can't escape today if it all gets going. When else would it be the last days? This is the only time it could be.
And Mr. Herbert W. Armstrong also wrote about how environmental damage could cause that, especially because of the possibility of nuclear bombs leaving so much radiation behind that it spreads across the whole entire planet. I mean, even if a bomb goes off in North Korea, that radiation, because of how powerful the bombs are, will affect everybody.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, if you look at what the men involved in the invention of the atomic bomb, what they said, once they saw what it did, or like the military leaders that saw the first tests, you know, a lot of them are quoted as saying, whenever the world does end, this is what people will see.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very hardened, very practical scientists and military personnel, and they realized that they had just unleashed, they'd opened Pandora's box to world destruction, and there's no closing it. Now, it hasn't happened yet, so it's easy to kind of say, well, you know, we'll be okay. We'll push that down the road a little ways. But, you know, North Korea could do it. Now, biblical prophecy doesn't indicate that they would, but they can certainly be involved in the process and the escalation of events. And those weapons are going to be used to some extent. And never before in man's history did we have that sort of capability. And so if you want to talk about are we in the last days, you can look at that almost alone, and it's a pretty good argument.
Really, all it takes is one leader to have one bad day and then to decide to unleash one of those bombs, especially in a place like North Korea, where that leader will not be told no by any of his top advisors. If he wants to launch a bomb toward the U.S. West Coast, he certainly will be allowed to do so. There's no one stopping him. It doesn't mean it's going to be a critical strike that will by itself destroy America, but that could cause a lot of issues and heighten a lot of tensions around the world and eventually lead to prophetic fulfillment.
Yeah, it already is causing a lot of problems. And, of course, they probably are working with Iran to some extent as well. But consider the escalation of violence and war in recent history. The 20th century was the bloodiest in human history. World War I commenced in 1914 and claimed 8.5 million lives. Then World War II resulted in 55 million deaths. Moreover, according to author and professor of political science, R.J. Rummel, totalitarian governments have slaughtered 170 million people for ethnic, racial, tribal, religious, or political reasons. Nation has continued to rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, just like Christ said it would. Just since World War II alone, there have been over 225 armed conflicts in 148 countries. Just looking at that history, would any rational person expect the tide to turn just on its own? I mean, do we expect peace to break out without some massive change to the way mankind thinks and acts? We can't even agree on what to do when the national anthem is played. We're going to solve man's problems? It doesn't appear to be the case.
We have too many people who are just completely naive to the threats that are out there, and we can't agree on what is the right way of life, the way that we should all be trying to build our nations. And of course, when you have leaders of all these different countries who believe that their system is the best and that their system needs to be imposed on other nations, I mean, conflict is always around the corner. There's always going to be war. You'll never see Russia and China submit to being ruled by the U.S. or vice versa. You'll always have nations in conflicts with each other and trying to gain the upper hand somehow. We just by nature tend to clash with anyone who is a little bit different with us.
Years and years of conflict here recently, a century of conflict. And of course, this new century that we're about 18 years into hasn't been any better. What else did Christ say we would see in the last days in Matthew 24? He gave some clues. Jesus foretold that many deceivers would arise to deceive many people before his return. False religion. We see that all over the world. False Christianity and other religions. Most conflicts are the result of religious division. And how you know, for those that are really putting their hope in this multicultural dream, how are those religions going to get along? They hate each other. If you have a group of people that believes that anyone that doesn't believe exactly like I do is doomed to some sort of eternal hellfire or whatever their version is, are you supposed to hang out with them at the cafe? Let's get serious. It's not going to happen. Never has, never will.
Yeah, the Bible says, can two walk together except they be agreed? If you don't have that fundamental understanding of what this life is for and what the next life is all about, it's kind of hard to agree on too much after that that's really important. So we see a lot of conflicts among religions. Think about it. This is a radio station sponsored by a church, and yet we freely admit that most conflicts in the world in all of history have been initiated by religion. It just happens to be false religion. It's religious beliefs that believe that you should go to war physically to fight for whatever you believe instead of letting God protect and provide. Clearly, God's true church wouldn't be picking up weapons and going to war, but a lot of other religions believe that you should do that and that you should impose your will on other people because they're believing the wrong things and they need to be changed, even if forcibly.
Right. You know, Christ was asked before he was killed, are you a king? And he said, well, my kingdom's not of this earth. If it was, my servants would fight. But it's not. So there goes the idea of, you know, Christianity fighting another religion. And of course, other religions do the same thing and they shouldn't. And there are other things that Christ mentioned as well that you can see. And of course, a lot of these are depicted in the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse. I think that's pretty famous. Famine. About 5 billion people live in the developing world, and at the turn of the century, almost 800 million of them were undernourished. Today, multiple millions die of starvation each year. We don't see that here in the West as much, so maybe we don't think about it. But it happens. Others are severely stunted in their growth, yet many experts believe the worst is yet to come. Think about also the starvation of the West with the foodless processed foods. Can you be obese and be starving? It can be. And that's what's happening in the West.
True. I mean, even the people who are extremely health conscious and are always looking to buy the best possible groceries and make the most healthy foods are not even close to what people used to be able to do, you know, 100 or 200 years ago, you know, an average 12-mile run into town if you felt like you had to. We couldn't do that today, just like every other person used to be able to do it back 100 or 200 years ago. We couldn't spend 16-hour days chopping wood or lifting heavy objects like we used to be able to do. There's only a very few among us now who are physically strong, physically vibrant, and a lot of that's because of the meals we're getting now and the mass production and just nutrients being actually purposely taken out of food to replace it with chemicals that taste better.
You know, I think what people have gotten better at in this Western society is covering over the effects of what we're actually doing to ourselves. Because you can look back, you know, a few hundred years and say, well, that those people, maybe they looked a little different or whatever, sometimes better, maybe sometimes worse. But if you took away all of the cosmetic repairs that we do to ourselves, we wouldn't look quite the same as we do, no matter what the case is. We live in a society where we're not dealing with the cause of things, but we try to cover over the effects. And to a point and for a time, it might look like things are a little better. But, you know, the food is here in the West, unless you really, really hunt, it's not doing good for the body. We have an outbreak of diseases, which ties into what else Christ talked about, which is pestilence. That can be disease, sickness, death. Of course, violence in the cities plays a role. But primarily, you think about some of these diseases. Of course, we've had the AIDS epidemic that's swept around. Now they feel like maybe they're starting to be able to get the drugs for that, I guess. But it's already claimed 25 million lives. It's adding about 2 million more each year. You talk about just the diseases in the West, not maybe as many communicable ones spreading around, but the diseases that come from poor diet, diabetes, cancer, things that are just continuing to happen, Alzheimer's disease, on and on and on it goes. You look at the amount of money people spend on medications. Is there a problem with pestilence, with diseases today? Yeah, for sure there is.
Yeah, and the thing is, we just turn to the magic pill or whatever else, whatever fad workout program or diet is put out there, and we think that we can have a quick fix for whatever is ailing us. You know, we're overweight, we're brittle, we have organs that don't work the way that they should, and we don't really respond to that with enough sleep, with enough water, with the right foods, with regular exercise. We just think that some genius we see in a TV commercial can fix everything for us.
There's also another thing that Christ mentioned that you would see, that we would all see as we get to the last days. Lots of natural disasters, earthquakes in different places. Now, of course, there's always been some disasters, but we've had a pretty intense year. Whenever catastrophic natural disasters strike, some people do contemplate God a little bit. I talk about that. But what's been really interesting, I think, in this last year is that we've had, of course, the major Hurricane Harvey, Irma. We've had Mexico's earthquakes, wildfires in the western U.S. But if you look at the hurricanes in particular, and let's say Harvey, not only was it historic rain like we've never seen, but the response to it was interesting. People were sort of bragging that we can overcome that. We can fight against that. The response has been different. And so this write-up here, this reprint says, you know, that it does cause some people to contemplate God, but I think we're seeing probably less and less of that now, where people feel like, well, science can take care of it, or technology, and we don't need to consider our ways. But yet we've had over $10 billion disasters in the U.S. just this year.
The mindset following these recent disasters has been way different than it used to be. It used to be people would mourn and they would wonder what went wrong or why God allowed it to happen. Now it's, look how tough we are because we're fixing it so fast. Yes, but you didn't prevent it from happening. There are ways to prevent it from happening that you did not put into practice. If we were so great, we wouldn't have been wiped out by hurricanes in the first place.
There's some really good Key of David programs about that also that you can find at thetrumpet.com about that topic, because there has been some talk about praying for help, but there's more to it than just praying. There's also some responsibility involved there individually. And so those are some of the things Christ talked about that you would see, you know, some of the natural disasters, you know, pestilence, you'd see famine, You'd see false religion. You'd see war. All of these things. And, you know, in some cases, people would scoff at it. They would dismiss it and say, we've always had that. And maybe to a point, they could get away with saying that, except for the major issue of the nuclear weapons today. That's one that I don't think you can reason around, because that's so in our face. And there's no way you could wipe out the entire Earth without those. You just couldn't. Yes, there have been disease epidemics, but they didn't travel across oceans typically. It'd be one region, you'd be fine in a different region. But when it comes to those types of weapons, even if everything else is dismissed, Christ did say these things were going to happen, and you have to look at those weapons and say, how else, when else would we have been in the last days?
Yeah, those weapons are a sure sign that we're in the end time, and it always feels every day like we're teetering on the brink of disaster. We know a few things have to be put into place before it actually happens, but any given day now, any month, any year, it could happen, because you have so many nations now with these weapons. You have so many nations who have multiple heated rivals or enemies, and they would have no problem unleashing that kind of destruction on those enemies. However, they have to understand as well that it's going to probably affect them.
And but it's not all bad news, even though that sounds pretty bad in a lot of ways. But there is a point to it all, and that is that God is trying to get the world to come to Him and to look to Him for solutions to these problems. These problems can all be solved, but people would have to go to the Bible. You know, cue the scoffing. But that's the truth of it. And Christ did give hope with His warning. The very being who created man is coming to establish the government of God on earth and to teach man the way to peace, to guide his inventive genius entirely into peaceful channels. Man does have quite an inventive mind that God created, but it's been used mostly for negative things, unfortunately. Also, you can look in the book of Micah there in the Old Testament. He also foretold of the establishment of God's kingdom on earth. That's in Micah 4:1-4. And, of course, a lot of that is depicted in the fall holiday season. So there's a lot about that that you can find at thetrumpet.com as well. We've been talking about this reprint article today. Are we living in the last days? There's another segment to it that we don't have time for, but you need to look at. It's included in the reprint, and it is Where Are We Now in Bible Prophecy? That's a very important topic to consider, because you could say, okay, if you agree with it and if you can see this, okay, yes, we are in the last days. You'd say, well, where exactly are we in the last days? You need to read the rest of this reprint article.
Yeah, and it helps to know that the book of Revelation is like a timeline of these different events. And maybe in places where Revelation only glosses over an issue, you can turn to another prophetic book in the Bible and get a lot more in-depth coverage on whatever event it might be. The Bible's pieced together in a way that you have to understand the framework of it. You have to understand where the timeline is, where the more in-depth passages are. There is a lot to grasp there, but I'm sure that inset should help a lot of people.
Yep, definitely. And there's a lot of great material on thetrumpet.com and related to this, Are We Living in the Last Days reprint. There's magazines you can subscribe to, The Trumpet, of course, and also the Royal Vision magazine. Latest Royal Vision magazine talks about some of these events and has a nice graphic right in the middle. It lays everything out so you can see, according to Scripture, when things happen, when they occur. Because, as you mentioned, if you go front to back and just read it, it'd be pretty confusing. Mm-hmm. It has to be pieced together and in a way that makes sense. And fortunately for everyone, it's already been pieced together. So you can find that information at thetrumpet.com. Make sure you check this out. Are We Living in the Last Days? A really good reprint article to look at. Also coming up today, make sure you listen for the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Brent Noctegal, today. That's coming to you from Jerusalem, and the Key of David program as well. Those things are coming up here in just a bit here on Trumpet Radio. That's about all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday, and make sure you do stay with Trumpet Radio Live and Trumpet Radio for the rest of today's programming. For myself, Dwight Folk, and Grant Turgeon, have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG.